30. Getting a message through. Modo returned to his cabin, still thinking of how the collision could have easily sent those fishermen down to the bottom of the ocean, all because they had crossed an invisible line known only to a few Icarians underwater. It was madness. And yet, what frightened him more was the look of absolute determination in Montoriel's eyes. She would be ruthless if she believed it would serve Icaria. The sooner he could get off the Actinio, the better. He knelt down beside the cot. The wireless was several inches from where he had left it.
"Hello?"
he whispered.
"Are you there, Griff?"
No answer. Modo moved the glass plate and sent out a message, keeping it short. "Actinio struck fishing ship, stop. 1454 GMT, stop. That is my latest position, stop." If they had not received his message by now, they would assume he was dead. He pictured Octavia in a black dress, mourning. And what would Mr. Socrates feel? Tharpa? He liked to think that they were missing him. However, the permanent association would no doubt carry on quite effectively without him.
"Stop being a dawdler, Modo," he whispered.
He felt lighter. The Actinio was ascending. He put the telegraph away, this time placing it in the darkest corner below the cot. When he arrived at the bridge, Captain Montoriel and several Icarians were standing next to Colette. The captain smiled at him, a surprise after their last conversation. Perhaps this was how she apologized.
"You are growing accustomed to the Actinio's ways, are you not, Mr. Walken? You sensed that something had changed. I am sure Colette would be pleased to tell you what we will be doing next."
"We're getting some fresh air," Colette said. She seemed to glow a little.
"Imagine that, Mr. Walken. We're actually going to see the sun again."
Montoriel clapped her hands.
"Yes, we are surfacing. Our oxygen tanks are low. I fear we have a leak, as we are still using more air than I had calculated. We will fill our tanks, sniff the rotten carcass that is the world, and retreat to the womb of Mother Earth again."
It finally dawned on Modo. The lost oxygen had gone into Griff.
"Doesn't she have a wonderfully poetic way of putting things?" Colette said. "Are you certain you're not part French, Captain?"
"I can assure you I have no French blood,"
Montoriel grinned.
"She could be quite beautiful. No English blood, either."
"Well, one can't have everything," Modo said, and was surprised by an even bigger smile from the captain.
For a moment, he could see why the Icarians followed her.
"To the surface, then."
She signalled, and one of the comrades climbed the spiral staircase to open the hatch. Pure, bright, glorious sunlight shone down into the ship. Modo moved into it, letting the rays fall on his head, his shoulders. He had missed the sun.
"Come, my friends," Captain Montoriel said. "Let us go topside."
She began climbing the ladder. Modo felt like a mole popping out of the dirt. At the top of the ladder, he stepped onto the deck of the Actinio, his hand shadowing his eyes. Nothing but ocean in all directions. He breathed deeply. He'd almost grown used to the clammy atmosphere of the submarine ship. Now he could see the length of the Actinio clearly, and its size was staggering. At least 75 yards from stern to stern, glistening with copper bolts. Each plate slid over the next, layered like fish scales. Guide wires were strung so that it was possible to walk from stem to stern without the danger of ocean waves washing a seaman away.
"She is a beauty, is she not?" Captain Montoriel said. "We are standing on my father's dream. Have you noticed the overlapping plated hull? He plucked the idea from nature herself."
Modo heard Griff's now too familiar cough and looked around. Even in the bright sunlight, the boy was invisible. Griff had spoken about taking control of the ship while they were topside. Was the cough a signal? It would be pointless to try. They were nowhere near land. They strolled to the bow of the Actinio, and Modo continued to breathe deeply, finding the air even sweeter.
"Your father must have been quite the man," he said.
"He was, Mr. Walken. He was a man of seni rauxa, sense and passion. He believed men and women should be equal. He had to hide from the Spanish police, all because he had a free mind. He wrote to my sisters and me every day when he was in exile in France. His first love was his family. Building a submarine ship was his second.
I would have liked to meet him, Colette said softly.
Was she acting? Modo wondered. Her words seemed genuine enough.
The Spanish government killed him.
He was murdered?
Modo grabbed the guide wire.
By bureaucrats, by paper pushers, and weak-kneed, small-minded generals from Madrid. They raised his first submarine ship out of the water, declared it useless. In their jealousy of us Catalans, they smashed it up for scrap wood. Then they put my father in prison, just for printing political pamphlets. Seeing his submarine ship destroyed broke his heart, and he died.
Ah, Modo thought, it wasn't exactly murder. But sad, all the same.
Then who built this?
I did. Following my father's plans and with Serdar's brilliant eye for engineering and finances. He had amassed a fortune in Cuba. It has all gone into the Ictinio and Icaria.
Modo remembered that she'd mentioned a second submarine ship. He was about to ask where it had gone when someone shouted from the tower. One of the men was pointing west. Captain Monturiel lifted her spyglass from her belt and looked through it.
A balloon? Who would be foolish enough to cross the Atlantic in such a frail vessel?
Modo squinted at the sky and soon could see a grey oval shape. Could Octavia and Mr. Socrates be in that balloon, searching for him?
Octavia!
It may have blown off course,
Colette said to Modo, excitement in her eyes.
Ah, she imagined it could be a French balloon. But there was no balloon capable of crossing the Atlantic, let alone one with a navigation system sophisticated enough to find them.
But what if it was tethered to a ship? No sooner had Modo entertained that thought than Monturiel said,
There is a rope extending down into the ocean, though I cannot yet see what exactly it's connected to. The balloon is close enough to read her markings now. It's called the Etna.
The Etna? Colette said. Is it a Greek vessel?
Montoriel adjusted her spyglass.
I cannot say, but now I can see a ship on the horizon.
She lowered the spyglass.
I have never seen such a beast.
She gave it another look.
It has been painted to match the water. Their flag is black. They do not want anyone to know their country of origin.
A black flag?
Would Mr. Socrates sail under a black flag? Modo could now make out the ship. Though it was not much more than a square in the distance, he counted 5 funnels. By that measure alone, it was massive. The whole ship faded from his vision. Modo wanted to rub his eyes in disbelief.
Did you see that?
Colette whispered. The ship reappeared, and a great puff of smoke was followed by a boom. Something shot toward them, whistling and screaming, and exploded 20 yards to the port side of the submarine ship. Waves washed over the Ictinio. Captain Montoriel had stood tall through the volley.
Comrades, she said evenly, return to your stations. We are under attack.